Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 138, being recorded on the 3rd of August, 2016, with special guests Jesse Drugan and Bill Zack from Blue Chip Consulting. I'm Sujit, and on Skype with me I have Evan and our special guests. And unfortunately, Kale may not be able to attend today. He said he had something that came up, so he probably won't be joining us. In case if he can, he'll just jump on the show at some point. But it's good to have Bill back on. I don't know if you our listeners remember, Bill Zack was on episode number 19. Bill,
do you remember? That's forever ago.
That was like almost 2 years ago. So it's really nice to have Bill come back on. I've been kept in touch with him over the years, and we'll let Bill reintroduce himself in a bit, as well as Jesse. But I just wanted to kind of make that connection that Bill was on the show before, and it's good to have him back. So as we normally do, we start off the show with some recent updates, and as usual, Evan's done a great job of putting some updates in our show notes. So Evan, is there anyone in particular you'd like to start with?
Yeah, actually, so as somebody that kind of focuses on IaaS these days, the in-place virtual machine, or the virtual machine uptime changes that we've made recently, and really recently is probably the wrong way to describe it. Basically, what we've been doing the last, you know, maybe year and a half, is we've been working really hard at the platform level to make sure that when we have to upgrade the host machines, right, because these are all virtualized machines with physical hosts, when we have to do an upgrade on a host machine, we can't completely eliminate it yet, but we want to really drive down the amount of time and the impact that it takes, or the impact it has on the guest, right? So it used to be, if you've been running in Azure for a while, you remember the days early on where your machine would get rebooted fairly regularly.
Oh yeah.
Due to the host level changes. Well, now we've made some significant architectural changes at the host level, such that now we're going to pause your machine for 30 seconds, and we're going to preserve the state. So basically, it's kind of like a Hyper-V, the way Hyper-V pauses, right? Not quite the same technology, but similar concept. And now you're not going to get that reboot. Now you might still have, you know, if you have a SQL query or something that will time out during those 30 seconds, that will, you know, unfortunately still happen. But it's a really, really big difference from the reboot, right, which we used to have. Again, we're in the process of making this better and better and better, and this is kind of where we're going, but we're significantly further down this path than we were, you know, a year and a half ago, given where we were at that point.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Can you imagine just freezing the machine, doing, you know, updating or patching your OS and then restoring it? That's fantastic.
Yeah, I think, you know, and And this is no inside information. This is just, you know, if you kind of look at where we're going, you got to think at some point we're really driving to the point where this pause is so short that you don't notice it.
Mm.
Right. And then at that point, you know, we can do whatever we need to do with the host. There's no impact on our customers at that point.
Well, the one that I liked from the list that you put out is the general availability of the Azure Active Directory B2C service, which is, so I guess typically, we like to think of Active Directory as a enterprise kind of security database. But now we're saying, you know, it's not just limited to the enterprise. If you have customers, and you may have millions of customers, typically the solution has been to either use one of the third-party the Google ID or the Microsoft ID or Facebook or something like that, and just let them authenticate there. But sometimes that's not always good. You want to have your own authentication, then you kind of roll your own or buy something out off the shelf. Now you have this, you know, the same Active Directory, which has been so successful for enterprises is now available for commercial, to put your customers' security information as well. And I think that's good. That's generally available, which means it's been in preview all this time, and now people can start using it for their all their .com applications.
Yeah, no, that's definitely. I mean, who hasn't written their own auth code at some point? And it's not fun, not easy, and very easy to make a mistake with.
Yeah. And then perhaps just kind of related to that is this Microsoft Authenticator, right? Which has also became generally available. And this is a sort of a multi-factor authentication system. Typically, we're used to MFAs being, sending you a text message or something like that, or maybe even call you and you have to enter a code. This is more of an app that's now available on all the major mobile devices. And essentially, they use the push notifications to kind of push, like when you try to log into a website that's protected with Microsoft Authenticator, it'll, basically trigger an app to start on your mobile device, and that would require to enter some sort of code on the mobile device itself to release the authentication on the server. So that's now generally available. They used to have various like Azure Authenticator. They had different names for it. Now they have just one app called the Microsoft Authenticator. So I thought that was just kind of related to the first one. But what else? Anything else you'd like to talk about, Javin?
Yeah, the other big one is the Azure Security Center going GA, right? So we've Windows and Linux both have some, strong security features and capabilities built into the OS. But at the end of the day, there's a lot more that goes layered on top of that, right? Looking at network traffic, looking at the configuration of your applications on there, do you have entries in your event logs, right? Things like that. And Azure Security Center goes and looks at all of that and then comes back and tells you, hey, these are the things that you need. These are alerts, right? You got this event in your event log that you need to go look at. Or, hey, we're looking at the traffic and we sampled it and it looks like there's something malicious running on your box based on, some traffic analysis. I think this is really where we're starting to add services on top of services, right? This is, something that you would have historically had to go figure out what to do and what to configure for all this stuff. And now, with the aid of the agents and some other capabilities of the platform, we're able just to layer this on top of the Azure Virtual Machines capabilities.
Yep, that's good. That's a good one. All right, so then let's get to our special guests for this evening. I think we already mentioned Bill Zach and his colleague Jesse Drugan, both from Blue Chip Consulting. Evan, you might remember we've from time to time we like to get partners, Azure partners, on the show just to spotlight some of the partners because they drive a lot of our Azure business as well as they fill in gaps that Microsoft has in their services offerings, which is something that's very important for us. So we love our partners, of course, and it's good to sometimes just showcase some of them. And I guess the reason I even came across Blue Chip Consulting is because our old friend Bill Zach has is now associated with them. So Bill, why don't we start with you and maybe give us a reintroduce yourself to our listeners and tell us how you are now working at Blue Chip Consulting.
Okay, that's great. Thanks, Sujita. It's a great pleasure to be back on the Azure podcast again. I can't believe it's been so long. Episode 19, and here we are at 138. So, and before the call, we were talking about how you and I were present at the birth of Azure, about 7 or 8 years ago. It's come a long way. At the time I met you, I was working for Microsoft internally as an architect. So for the past 3 years, I've been working as a outside consultant to the Azure product group, helping customers and partners adopt Azure. And now recently I joined Blue Chip Consulting Group as a senior architect. I don't want to make this a sales pitch, but just by way of introduction, Blue Chip's a Microsoft Gold Partner. We do implementation projects using Microsoft technologies, including StorSimple. And unlike a lot of companies, we do a lot of fixed price projects, which is kind of unique in the consulting business. So that's a little bit about me. What I want to do is set the stage for the StorSimple discussion, talk about why, what the justification is for StorSimple. If you look at the data in a data center,
Sorry, Bill, let's just give Jesse a chance to introduce himself. We'll get started. Jesse, can you please give us a quick update on yourself?
Yeah, thank you. And first of all, thanks for the invite to come and speak. It's a great opportunity, and I really appreciate it. So my name is Jesse Drugan, as been mentioned, and I am a senior solution architect with Blue Chip on the infrastructure side, so specializing in data center technology from System Center to Hyper-V, and of course now Azure, as that stuff is starting to bleed over into the cloud and move over to it. So getting into Azure IaaS and specifically into some of the different suites of OMS and EMS, and now into StorSimple is really starting to heat up. It's a great product, and starting to see a lot of movement on it. And it's a great product. Looking forward to getting into some details about it. I'm going to kick it back over to Bill to let him finish this thing before I get going, because once I get going, it gets it's kind of hard to turn me away from it. So we'll let Bill get going here.
Yeah, no, thanks. Yeah. Thanks, Jesse. And Bill, sorry. So I guess we're going to be talking about this StorSimple product, and it's just surprising that we really haven't spent much time talking about this in 138 shows that we've done so far, which is kind of odd. So I'm glad that we get a chance to educate our listeners on this. So yeah, Bill, let's continue what you were trying to tell us earlier.
Okay, yeah, before we get into the technical details, the reason for StorSimple is that data grows exponentially, 50 to 60% a year in the data center. And most of that data is kind of stagnant. It's not referenced, it's not accessed, it's just there. That coupled with the fact that cloud storage is cheaper than on-premises storage means that it would be a good idea to try to get that data off-premises. And what StorSimple is StorSimple is basically a hierarchical file system, a storage area network with solid-state drives. It's actually a physical appliance with solid-state drives, rotating media, and I like to say it has the cloud inside, but really, we know the cloud's not inside. So less frequently referenced data gets migrated automatically through those tiers, gets compressed and deduplicated. The bottom line is that it means you need less storage space in your data center. So that's really what it's for.
That's very, very innovative use of the cloud, I got to say that. Let's kind of maybe get into some more details. Like how does somebody, what's the trigger for someone to, a company to say, we really should take a look at something like StorSimple? You mentioned maybe, that they're trying to reduce their storage costs or something like that. But what would really trigger somebody to say, let's take a look at this StorSimple product?
Okay, Jesse, do you want to jump in or want me to?
Yeah, sure. I can take this one.
Okay.
Thanks, Will. Yeah, so it's a great question, and I get it a lot. Right? So as I bring up StorSimple to my clients as I'm working with them on different Azure products, and their first question is, what do I do with it? Why do I want it? Why do I need it? And really to get that, it's to kind of step back and understand what it does. And as Bill said, it's auto-tiering and compression and does the standard stuff that most storage does. But where the secret sauce is with it is the fact that it does have, of course, SSD. And there's two models of StorSimple. There's an 8100 and 8600. The only difference between those two is the amount of data that you can store on there, the sizing. And as I go through, I'll kind of explain what the differences are. But
and to be clear, Jesse, you mean store locally, right? Because it's infinite behind the scenes, right?
It's actually not infinite behind the scenes. It is capped now. Could you call Microsoft if you run out of space and ask for more? Sure, potentially, right? We've seen that in the past a lot with Microsoft. They'll kind of cap things at first to kind of give you an idea of, kind of give them an idea of their adoption rate and make sure that that they're ready for it. But if you come up against that limit, you can call and request some more and talk to them about it. I'll get to that limit. So the 8100 and 8600, like I said, they have SSD drives. They have spinning drives inside of it. When data first comes in, it'll actually go into the SSD side. It'll stay in the SSD until the SSD gets 80 to 85% full, and then it's going to auto-rotate out to the spinning disk, right? And that's a spinning SAS disk. From there, as that starts to fill up 80 to 85%, the least used data will start to rotate out to Azure. And it's an Azure storage account that's been set up when the Store Simple is set up. Where that storage account is located is determined as part of the configuration. Generally speaking, you want that to be close to your data center in whatever region is closest to your data center. Whatever tier of storage you want to set up, there's a premium option for that. But really, it's for archival for most cases. So what we're looking for workload is what makes sense to have on there that as things start to age, they would fall off into Azure. Now, that doesn't mean it's not accessible. It's very accessible. If somebody clicks on a file that's needed to come back, the user will get the very familiar blue circle spin while that data is retrieved back into the SSD tier. So it's readily available. If it's now, they're going to start using it regularly. And then after that, it ages off into the normal pattern. Speaking of those disks, we talked about.
Question over there, just to set the stage here, Jesse. So, is this a SAN installation that you were talking about here?
Yeah, great question. So, another common question: the two models we're talking about, the 8100 and 8600, are the physical devices. Those two physical devices are an iSCSI attached storage device. They and of themselves have no way to present data. Right? They will need some kind of iSCSI host to host the actual shares, a Windows server.
I see.
So these are the two physical boxes. There are a couple different virtual options. There's a virtual appliance that can be stood up in Hyper-V or VMware that acts like the brains of Store Simple. It has the logic in there, but actually uses existing disk that the client has in their environment as that back-end disk, and still will archive off into Azure as the physical devices. That virtual device actually has an option to be a NAS as well. It can actually advertise shares out without the additional of having a server in front of it.
So that's like a software version of Store Simple, is that it?
Yeah, and really where that's targeting at right now is small office, back office, small retail outlets, something where you would need the ability to do this archival that Store Simple does. But maybe don't have a data center where you want to, put these physical boxes at, but you may have some virtualization infrastructure already there.
I see. So the iSCSI device is connected to an existing server of some sort, and that's the one that presents all the file shares?
Correct, yeah.
Okay. All right. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
No, great questions. Thank you. And so I talked a little bit about there's some limitations as far as the differences between the two models are the amount of data that you can store out there. Locally speaking, the 8100 can store 15 terabytes. Now that's roughly 800 gigs of SSD and 14 terabytes of spinning disk. The 8600 can do 38 terabytes. That's 2 terabytes SSD and 36 terabytes of spinning disk. Now on the back end inside Azure, we did mention that there is a cap there, at least a soft cap. And the 8100 is 200 terabytes and the 8600 is 500 terabytes. So you still got plenty of room up there. But if you should happen to bump into that, it's a phone call and potentially get that raised.
Now, and there's a, so, there's also,
yeah.
I was going to say, there's also a version that runs in Azure as well, right? Is that one of those series you're talking about, or I guess it's another model number at that point.
Yeah, that's a fantastic segue. Thank you. The next section, the next thing that really separates Store Simple is besides the fact it's just a storage device, is the way it handles data backup recovery and disaster recovery. So obviously data backup and recovery is your everyday stuff. How do I get a volume back to get a file back that a user has accidentally deleted? Disaster recovery, my appliance is belly up because of a rack level incident. What do I do? So Store Simple has the ability to take snapshot backups from Azure. You set up and configure it either in Azure or a utility that you download and put on your server. And then you take those snapshots at a given rate that you pick out. And those snapshots can be stored locally on the Store Simple or in Azure. There's some best practices and guidelines around that. And the snapshots that you store in Azure are your offsite storage, right, for your backup. So you have that available offsite if there's a disaster. So here's a scenario. You have an event, your rack is gone, your Store Simple is gone, your file server that's serving that data is gone. Inside Azure, there's a virtual machine that's essentially a template that you spin up in Azure that can connect to the latest backup that you have up there and start serving that data out. It's fairly quick as opposed to standing up the new hardware to get that data up and available. Furthermore, and if you guys have talked about Azure Site Recovery in the past, Azure Site Recovery can actually automate that recovery as part of your entire disaster recovery automation with Azure Site Recovery. If there's a disaster, you can kick off that that workbook inside ASR to have it restore that virtual machine, spin it up, and have it connect to your latest backup automatically as part of your runbook.
Now, and when you've got that, you know, I spin up my you know, I have this major disaster, and once I pick myself up off the floor, right, I spin up this Azure virtual machine, and now I have my device. How am I accessing that data over an internet connection, or do we generally recommend that people have a hybrid connection to that that virtual machine so that you're coming in through a site-to-site or express route or what? How does that part work? How do I actually talk to my data?
Yeah, ideally, at this point, you would have some form of site-to-site or express route set up. So the best practice would be to have that set up. It's the amount of data that's going to be coming across with the backups and such would be the best idea to have that tunnel set up and not going over the internet.
Right. Okay.
Accessing that data would be accessing it across that, you know, you want that encrypted line to go across.
Okay.
That's not the only way to recover, though. That's just the quickest way to get your backup running.
Yeah.
You can also just restore the volumes back down. So if you have a rack level incident, you have a rack next to it, and you can get the device back up and running, you can pull the volumes down back to that device, and it'll actually allow you to access that data as if it's coming from that local device, but it's actually coming from Azure. And in the background, it's continuing to copy it down until the point of where it is actually available locally.
Okay, cool.
Now, I know you. I was going to ask you the question about Express Route. So you mentioned Express Route is useful in these disaster scenarios. But in a normal Happy Day scenario, would you still recommend that they use Express Route to be the connection to Azure, or using the internet connection is okay?
Using the internet connection is okay, especially when you're still kicking the tires. But what I found for my clients is the most people, when they get to StorSimple, is they have made the commitment to move forward with Azure. And typically, this is the StorSimple is part of a bigger project, usually with, to be honest, the implementation of EMS products, the different suite products, which usually includes, you know, setting up the federation and such, which ends up setting up Express Route. So usually, this ends up being part of a really big project that just a piece of the puzzle that ends up people are creating that connectivity anyway to serve other means that they're doing things out there. So ideally, Express Route, or at least a VPN, but the internet connectivity is available as well.
Okay. Good. I mean, it probably, even on the internet, does it use some encryption? I think, didn't we have some new encrypted APIs? I forget now. I know we talked about it a while ago. But does StorSimple encrypt the data by default?
The backup, yeah, absolutely. The data that's coming out of the either archival or the snapshot is encrypted.
Okay, all right. And does it idea? I suppose it uses the parallel connections, right? For performance to get better performance. Does it open up multiple? Does it do those parallel uploads and downloads into Azure Storage?
I'm not familiar with that. I have not heard that. I'm gonna venture on saying no, it doesn't expand that way, but I would have to look into that. I'm not entirely sure.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's fine. I mean, I know sometimes having a single connection can only limit your data download to a certain extent.
Sure.
And then they have this concept where, I mean, you know, you have these utilities like AZ Copy and things like that, which can open up, you know, multiple connections, and then each one downloads a different part of the file to make it faster. Yeah,
sure.
So, yeah, it
sure.
does. It does
multiple
do multi.
Threads, yeah.
Yeah, it does do the multi-threaded uploads and downloads. So, Sujeet, I have the, you know, again, and this is not a knock on StorSimple. This is just what I do for a living, audience. I have had the pleasure of troubleshooting some StorSimple cases, and yeah, it is multi-threaded in both directions. So, you know, they are parallelizing you know, where it makes sense.
Okay, that's good.
Excellent.
Now, from an Azure perspective, though, is there something like if a customer is, you know, going into this router of SoSimple, what's anything special has to be done from the Azure side, or it's just open up a normal Azure account, storage account? You mentioned the premium account or the premium storage. Is that something you recommend?
It depends on the use case, right? So, I mean, if you're doing archival and your sole purpose of using StorSimple is, you know, for instance, a user files, and the user files that are going to be mostly used are down and available for the users. For instance, you have, 38 terabytes on the 8600. If you have 36 terabytes of actively used files and the rest of your data is going to be archival data off in the Azure, that really doesn't need to be premium storage. If, however, you're doing something where that data that's up in Azure is more important to you and you want to be, more highly available, not highly available as in a redundancy, but from a speed perspective, its potential. The use case really lends itself to be, more a slower disk, low cost disk. But Microsoft has put the premium availability out there if the client has a proper use case for it.
And this is really, to your point, Jesse, this is really about getting your data off premises with the assumption that you're not, you don't want to lose it, but you don't need daily or, you don't need frequent access to it. Right. Yeah, and so that's kind of the whole mentality around that. Now, one thing that I've run into, working with this is that there is this concept of you need to size the device right to your use case, right? In the sense of if you buy a device that's too small for your working set, that can lead to performance issues. How does somebody figure out what their what size device they need, right? How much on-premises storage they need? Is that just you look at your existing storage, or are there some rules of thumb that people can use? Each user is going to tend to produce X amount of data. How do you help people size this stuff?
So Bill touched on the fact that statistics state that data grows exponentially, 50 to 60% annually inside the environment. And the client should be able to, not everybody has the proper tools because they just don't, haven't been able to put the proper investments and fundings in to get it. But most clients can tell you that what their growth rate is, especially when you get down to what exactly they're going to be putting out there. If they can't, then, look at what they have now and try to size it as, having two models, right? It's either 81 or 8600.
Yeah,
you want to allow growth rate, and you also want to allow enough, because we, for those that are familiar with storage, a storage performance is not the same regardless of how much storage you're using, right? So as you get closer to the 80, 90, 95% utilization rate, the performance of that storage is going to start to decline a little bit.
Right.
And that's where when I say that 80, 85% is going to start to roll off to Azure, because Microsoft knows that, right? So they're not going to fill that device up to 100% and then roll off, right? They're going to get to that point where it's going to, maybe you would start to see some performance issues if you went any fuller, and then they're going to go ahead and roll off some of that stuff so you don't potentially see that impact.
Okay, no.
So as far as helping the client size,
Like go big is the answer, though, to some extent.
Yeah,
right?
I guess part of the issue is that the working set of data that's accessed is different for everybody.
Right.
And that part is a little hard to... That part is a little hard to estimate, but statistically, it's the 50 to 60% increase, and working set is much smaller than the total amount of storage that you have out there.
Right. So I'm still going big. I think it's the safe approach. It sounds like.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get an idea from a user perspective, right? I think we all understand the sort of the expected performance difference between, say, an SSD and a spinning disk, right? I think most of us have experienced that difference. Help us understand once you have to. Make do with the files coming from Azure, which is done transparently. I know the user is not aware of it, but what is the percentage drop off in performance? Like, how much longer does it take?
Do you guys want me to take this one, or one of you guys want to do this?
Anyone?
Yeah,
go ahead.
Go ahead.
Please,
go ahead.
Yeah. So really, Sujeet, what it comes down to is it's you know, if you look at a typical, you know, on-premises storage device, right, a, you know, quote-unquote good storage device is going to give you sub 10 millisecond access times.
Okay.
Right, for a given block of data. For when you start talking, you know, when you're accessing your remote data, so your cloud data, right, you're just transfer, you're talking, you know, depending on distance, you could be as much as 20 or 30 milliseconds just for transfer, right? You know, it's roughly order magnitude, just for, you know, the sake of ballparking it, it's about 70 milliseconds of latency to go across the country, right? So, you know, you know, depending on where you are relative to where your data is stored, it's pretty easy to do some rough math, but you're, no matter what you do, unless you happen to be sitting right next to that data center, you're going to see, you know, 20, 30 milliseconds. It would not be unusual. I mean, Bill, Jesse, is that kind of what you guys see as well?
Yes, that's very accurate. And again, that's where Microsoft's best practice is to make sure you align your storage account with the region that most closely aligns with where your data center is, to keep that latency to a minimum.
Okay. And then the follow-up question to that, that's good, actually, Evan, thanks. And the follow-up question is, it doesn't matter how big the data is, the performance will still be the same, correct?
As long as you can do it.
In other words, if I have all, what about, how many terabytes did you say it can handle? 200? You know.
Oh, you're saying assuming it's 8100. All local. I guess you're saying assuming it's local.
Local I understand. I'm saying now let's assume like we're filling up, we're using a lot of the Azure storage, right? 200 terabytes of it. Is the performance is the same irrespective of how much data I do have in the cloud, right? Whether I had 50 terabytes in the cloud or 200 terabytes in the cloud, I'm still getting that's the. It's not like having more data means it's going to be slower, does it?
It shouldn't be. You know, that's kind of the whole way Azure storage is designed.
Right.
Right, is that it is underneath the covers, it is a ton of machines working in parallel, right, to service your data. So theoretically, you know, you shouldn't see.
But remember, StorSimple is acting as a gigantic indexer, right, to this data. Isn't that what it does?
Yeah, to some extent. But I think when you go actually request the file, right, so you request your blocks of data, those blocks are going to be scattered across the. So you have your storage account, right, which is this logical construct, and then the individual data is then stored on, you know, physical platters somewhere, you know, or, you know, SSD or platters, and that data, but that data is across multiple hard drives ultimately.
Right.
So you should see, you know, I don't, there's probably some, you know, if you go for a really big file, then, you know, we may not, you might end up with chunks of data on the same spindle, right? Just, you know, on average, but so there is some drop off, but I think on average, it should be pretty consistent no matter what you get size wise.
That's excellent. I mean, that's really a real eye-opener about StorSimple there. That's good. So, Jesse, any more tips that you have for people that want to adopt StorSimple? How might they prepare themselves? You know, what should they be looking at from their on-premises systems today so they can make the move to StorSimple a little easier, anything of that nature?
Yeah, so what I will say that to help set some maybe some minds at ease or some answer some questions out there, because another question I get a lot is there any way to prevent data from rolling off into Azure? Because not, you know, there's some pieces of data that maybe is only accessed a couple times a year, but it's accessed by people who want it immediately and who get very unhappy if it's not accessed immediately. StorSimple actually has the ability to pin a certain percentage. Now, it's not the entire device, but you can pin a certain percentage of the volumes, of the capacity of the device to local only. So the data that's stored inside there will not archive off to Azure.
Okay.
That can be handy for, like I said, instances like you know, reports or something that's only accessed once or twice a year, but the executives want them immediately when they do get accessed.
Okay.
You know, it's
as far
those...
as
No, go ahead, Jesse.
I was just going to say, as far as what to look for in your environment, you know, it's there's, you know, reports and tools out there to help you out, figure out what's hasn't been used in your environment in a really long time. You know, find those files that aren't being touched and take a look at your percentages. How much storage out there is being used for files that are never touched? And this is a perfect situation where, you know, that stuff can be moved out of your data center to, you know, less expensive storage, potentially from what you run in your data center, and maybe freeing up that storage for different activities that require, you know, actually being in your data center to be completed.
Okay. And Blue Chip can help them with this entire life cycle. Like if they've never seen StorSimpler before and they want to adopt it, you guys can walk them through the entire process.
Yeah, absolutely. And I get that a lot, which is, you know, they get StorSimpler devices, either through, you know, the different agreements and options that are available through Microsoft. They're not real sure what they're going to do with it, but they like the concept of it. So typically what I start my engagements out with the clients, isn't diving right into the technology. It's a little bit of a session, some time with them to go through a lot of what we just talked about, just to kind of get them thinking of what's in their environment, what do they want to do with it, how can they use it. It doesn't do anybody any good, doesn't do the client any good, doesn't do us any good, doesn't do Microsoft any good if we install it and then the client never uses it. We want them to get the most use out of it, you know, some value return on getting it and putting it in and supporting it. So, you know, probably half of the engagement is centered around training and use cases and helping them figure out the best way to utilize that device to get the most out of it.
Okay. And how do we handle, like, you know, my customers in the financial space, and obviously there's all sorts of, you know, regulations and all with regards to data in the financial space. How do you kind of address those scenarios with StorSimpler?
So, you know, Azure has a lot of requirements met from a certification perspective and requirements perspective. If there's questions about, you know, what requirement has been certified for Azure storage, you know, those are all well documented. But if somebody is still uncomfortable about putting, you know, financial data or such out into Azure, like I mentioned, there is the pending there that's possible. Mm-hmm. I have had the question before over the past of, well, if I just don't put 80% on it, then I'm good, right? And that's not, if you really have sensitive data that you don't want in Azure, that's really not the way to go about it. Mm-hmm. So sooner or later, somebody's going to drop a big file out there and start pushing stuff out, right?
You don't want to hope that it doesn't go out to Azure.
Yeah, exactly. Be a little more controlled than that. But I will say, though, that for the government side of Azure, there is a StorSimpler does interface with the government side of Azure. So if somebody's in that side of it, in the government side of it, and they want to look at StorSimpler, absolutely can be used and utilized, and it back ends then into the you know, the government offering of Azure.
And remember, you know, that as we said earlier, the data is encrypted, so it's encrypted in transit, encrypted in storage, so it's pretty secure.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, I'm certainly comfortable with it, but I was just wondering, like, I think the pinning might be the kind of solution that these companies that have a specific set of data that they just do not want to go into the cloud, and I suppose they could just pin that locally, and then everything else can go to the cloud. Yeah, that's good. Great tips. All right, that's good. Any more questions for the guys, Evan?
No, this was great. Appreciate you guys coming on.
Excellent. And thanks for representing your company, Blue Chip Consulting. Sure, listeners will be very happy to know that StorSimpler can do these things, and there's somebody out there that can help them with it. So that's all good. All right, Bill, thanks for having you back on. It's been a pleasure, as always. And Jesse, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
No, thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Great.
Take care. Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.